All right, welcome back. Good to have you with us on this Friday morning. We're talking about this Miller hearing yesterday involving Ethan Crumbly and whether or not there should be a possibility of parole attached to his sentence. That's what Judge Kwame Brown has to figure out. Now, the prosecution yesterday rolled out the carpet. They laid out a lot of information, more coming today in round two. But it was jarring, to say the least.
Boy.
It was horrifying. And again, from a non-law perspective, looking at this particular case, I don't know how you look at this and say this is somebody that can be rehabilitated.
It was hard, and I know Todd Flood is on the line. He will be talking to him in just a second, but I know he kind of prepped us a little bit when we talked to him. But I don't know, Todd, if you could have prepped us for what we saw yesterday.
Lloyd, I got to tell you, when I said what Kerry McDonald has is going to shock the conscience, I think is an understatement. It does shock the conscience of a human being putting in writing what it is and his desires and how he wants to see other human beings suffer, and he would practice that suffering on animals, the bird, for example. His psychology, the prism for how he sees this world is so disturbing that that's where the judge has to ask himself, is there the ability for rehabilitation? Because the presumption, again, is that he is to get a sentence of a term of years. Kerry McDonald's asking for a life without parole sentence. So to overcome that burden, she's clearly showing that rehabilitation is a fleeting one. It's not even in the realm of possibility. Scary to me is the fact that he had not only premeditated this murder well prior to the events. He had also had visions of killing a girl just 2 miles away and raping her and then dismember her body. Mm-hmm. It's just one synapsis of wrong after another in that kid's brain. So I don't see where the judge is going to find any defense mitigating circumstances. What the defense is trying to do and what they have to do. And this is a must. It's not, something that they take lightly, but they have to show that there are mitigating circumstances. The fact that he, CPS was called 6 months prior to this, the fact to the parents' house, the fact that he was crying out for help. My parents are screaming. We don't have money for food. The home structure, which I think bodes towards the prosecution, that's another trial against the parents.
I was going to ask you about that. Does this case at all kind of foreshadow what we see in his parents' case?
The only thing that's going to be relevant is it does in some regards, but those text messages and the journal realistically will not come in the parents' trial because the parents are going to claim it's hearsay one and two, they didn't have knowledge,
sure.
Not competent, so they didn't have knowledge. But clearly there's going to be other pieces of evidence in the parents' case, CPS, the fact that the kid, had been begging for help. There's statements that come in a witness down the street, that it was the neighbor, we'll talk about that, with regards to the neighbor's the one that called CPS. Uh-huh. So those types of things will come in. But I just, back to Ethan Crumbly, the big question is, hey, can you rehabilitate this human being? He's 15, those tender years. Is there a possibility that he's got some redeemable mitigating circumstances to do that.
Well,
and when you look at it, you just don't see it.
And here's the other part of this is there was a point in his journal where he said, you know, I want to go back to what it was like in the old days when he was an A and B student. Then his grades started to slip, and he talked about how he thought it was strange that his parents weren't being called, or that the school hadn't called him down to the office to talk about his grades because he wasn't doing his work. I mean, those are cries for help. Those are cries for, I want to go back to a time when things were better, when I was doing better. And this is where I don't know that he's able to be rehabilitated, because I saw him in that courtroom yesterday, and I wondered if he was happy with this. If this is exactly what he wanted, because he talked about, I'm going to shoot up the school, and then when the police come in, I'm going to surrender, and I'm going to spend the rest of my life in jail. And he talked about doing just that. He did. He talked about the voices inside his head. He said, those are the some people say that's the demon. He goes, I am the demon. I mean, this is a kid, I think we are obviously past rehabilitation. I think if the parents were at all involved, they would have looked at him 3 years earlier, 4 years earlier, and maybe would have been able to help him. But in terms,
I think you got it. Yeah, on 2 points. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I think on two terms, you're absolutely right. On all fronts, you're absolutely right. But a neuropsychologist is going to get up there and talk about exactly what you're mentioning, what you're bringing up. The cries for help, one. Both through, it sounds like, to the school and to the parents and to Child Protective Services, the cries for help. But he is reveling in this moment, right? Based on all of the text messages and what he wants to see and how he wants to see it. You know, this is the day before, hours prior to the attack, he wrote, "Now I become deaf. Destroyer of the world. See you tomorrow, Oxford." This is a kid, I think, that is reveling in the world watching him, right? They get to see it. Now, smarter people and doctors are going to be able to say, okay, everybody, take a step back. Here's the wiring problem with this young man. Huh? He is mentally disturbed, but on this medication and this treatment and this therapy, we can make it, you know, him redeemable and rehabilitated. That's what I think the defense is going to come with, and that's going to be a big question for the judge, because a 15-year-old, presumably is not supposed to be in prison for the rest of his life. I just, as it comes out, you know, this is so clear, Lloyd, Chris, yeah, that he is premeditated and is looking for fanfare and doing what he did.
And
that, to me, is the disturbing part.
And, Ty, let me ask you this, too. I was watching yesterday on the stream, and I saw the fact that the people in the courtroom were watching the actual video of the shooting. Not a dry eye, people wiping their faces, crying, some hysterically. And my thought is, could the prosecution, could they have just talked about the journal and said, you know, this is what's going on in the journal, and not have shown that video to prove their point? Did they have to show the video to prove their point? I mean, because the journal, I'm telling you, was devastating enough to me.
Right. So, you know, I because I have a client in the case who was shot, I got to watch the video, and Lloyd, it shook me. It shook me. I've never seen it. I've been in this business a long time, and I hadn't seen anything that disturbing, because it's so cold. It's so sick. It's like he's playing a game. And the only reason that I think the judge needed to see that video, because this is a prosecution showing the courts the video to bring out the circumstances of the event as it took place, how it was seen through the eyes of Ethan Crumbly and the victims. The judge wants to know because it's that fourth factor and the,
sure.
you know, and that's the only reason.
And from the prosecutor's perspective, is this a case where you lay out all your cards? Because if you hold something back, maybe something that's even hard for the victims' families to see, the victims to see, anybody to see. If you get a decision that you're unhappy with, that there's a possibility for parole, and you held something back that maybe could have made a difference, is that the reason why you lay out all this information real quick?
Yeah, you don't leave anything to chance.
Yeah.
You don't leave anything to chance. Karen McDonald's doing exactly what she needs to do. It's terrible. To Lloyd's point, you know, is it more probative, that, you know, or is it more prejudicial, or is it just adding on, you know, too much?
Right.
In this particular case, I just don't think it's so serious. You don't leave anything to chance.
Mm.
She's giving the information to base her decision because she's not always, she's overturned 19 life sentences.
Yeah.
So she takes this serious. So my thought is that she has to give the court.
Yep. Everything she's got. Yep. Todd, I'm sorry. I'm up against it. We got to take a break. More coming up next.